You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Gene Johnson.
From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's Game of Thrones After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. If you'd like to buzz in on tonight's show, you can buzz us at 424-256-1729. That's 424-256-1729. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Game of Thrones After Show.
I don't even know how to start off the show, because usually I'm excited and intense and into it, but that was just absolutely insanity. But let me introduce my co-host across the table, the lovely Kristen Snyder.
What's up, guys?
And joining us once again, Kyle Maddock.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
And guys, I'm Dave Klein. And for those of you who don't know, Kyle joined us earlier this season. He's from the A Song of Ice and Fire podcast.
Yeah, Podcast of Ice and Fire.
Yes, Podcast of Ice and Fire. Great podcast. Been running for 5 years, I believe.
Yeah, we've been going for 5 years.
So even before the show, so you know he knows his stuff.
Uh-oh, put me on the spot on this one.
So, man, the Red Wedding tonight. If you guys have heard Game of Thrones readers talking about the Red Wedding before and it was going to be insanity, that's what this is. I forgot to wear my red, sadly. I'm wearing white again.
I'm wearing red.
Kyle thought about it with his bracelets. Kristen, I dropped the ball.
We've got some red leaves going on over
there. Yeah, a couple of red leaves there.
It's like splatters of blood because I was there.
So that's kind of what this episode was. So let's go ahead and jump right into that storyline because that's how we start off. When we start off in River Run with Rob and Catelyn talking war strategy, where Rob's thinking about trying to infiltrate Casterly Rock, which is different, as I talked about a different week, from the books where he wanted to infiltrate the... Well, he wasn't trying to attack the Lannisters in the book version of it.
No, not so directly.
But, yeah, so they're kind of talking tactics here, and he's finally trying to take his mom's advice because of everything that they undid.
Yeah, when did Catelyn become such a military strategist?
Well,
all those times with Ned in bed. Apparently he talks, that's bed talk, right?
Oh, between them.
Yeah.
Honestly, let's be truthful. If Rob would have actually listened to his mother from the beginning, this all could have been prevented. That's what I'm thinking. Mothers know best.
That's true. I mean, all of this comes down to...
treason.
Everything with Talisa. So it all comes down to that. But they end up arriving at the twins in the very next scene. And there's a point that I really want to throw out here, which just differentiates from the books. And there was a lot that was really close. But here we see them eating the food that's offered to them by the Freys. And there's a really big point of this in the books where Catelyn is constantly worried. And as soon as they get the food, she's relieved and makes a point of it. Because the tradition in Westeros is as long as you get food, as long as you're fed, you are a guest. And no harm can come to you as a guest. And Walder Frey kind of explains that there, but Catelyn really has a lot of unsettling thoughts throughout the book during this, and I just wanted to explain further how big of a deal that is in the Westeros world.
Yeah, it certainly is big. It's the law of hospitality, and in the book it nails it home. Make sure you eat something. Make sure you eat something.
Yeah.
Which I like. But
And he goes, I will eat any grub they give me.
Just give it to me.
What about the grub in the beginning? Those appetizers didn't look too appetizing. Did you guys see it? It was like rice and ground beef, and they were just picking it up by their hand.
Was it even rice?
No, I don't even know if it was rice.
Looks like a bowl of salt.
I'm making that up. That's part of the thing is
the food was actually supposed to be not very good, and neither was the music's completely off because it's not actually musicians playing the music. But the music sounded fine in the show to me.
It sounded like, I told you guys, I felt like it was all unsettling, and it really felt like war music. It never at one point did I feel relaxed at that party. I mean, you wanted to be there, but I certainly did not.
Just the ambiance was beautiful. I mean, before the excitement happened. But was that the Reigns of Castamere? I'm not sure.
I think it might have been the Reigns of Castamere that they're playing at the very final scene. Because I was thinking, like, I recognize it, so it sounds like it could have been.
And you could just see, you could see it all on Kat's face. She knew as soon as they closed the door and the music played.
Yeah.
She was just, like, praying to the heavens.
She knew. Yeah, because the Reigns of Castamere is a song about the Lannisters.
Right, it's about the Lannisters
destroying an entire family.
Yeah, so We got a bunch of people saying that they were finally, like, Lady Friend Love on the chat says, I started to really like Talisa tonight.
Perfect timing.
And she says, I didn't like the show Talisa compared to Jane in the book, which is her name in the book, until tonight. And then, whoops. But yeah, that was another difference here is we see Talisa at the very beginning. She is here. She's at the wedding. And in the story, in the novel, she is actually stays back. Rob wants to keep her away from everything because he doesn't want to keep all of his love things in one place. So he's there with his mom. So he wants to keep Talisa back over at River Run.
Yeah, she actually stays in River Run with the Blackfish. The Blackfish and her never make it to the wedding. So we have this moment where she's the first to go. Was she the first to get stabbed?
She was the very first.
She was the very
first. Actually, her child was the first.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, she was still sort of alive, but I think she's going to die from bleeding out. But I was so surprised.
She's only almost dead. Yeah.
She's fine.
Well, if it was Walking Dead, she'd come back as a walker, probably.
Yeah.
And I also thought, did Kat have an arrow in her back like that entire last scene?
Yeah, she did.
She did.
Rob had a few.
She got it right through the shoulder as she was running at some point.
But, what a mother, though, right?
Yeah.
Till the end.
Wow, yeah.
Chris M. Mancini says, Talisa's death was a slaughter. Yeah, it kind of was. But before we jump on all that, though, and we're definitely going to talk a whole lot about that, let's kind of talk about the lead up to it and the fact, and rewind a bit to Walder Frey being crude as hell, talking about his daughters. Can't remember one of their names. Whatever you say it is.
Wild, Weedy, Weedy, Wooda, whatever her name was.
That's what I got out of it, the name game.
And then her name was Mary or something like that.
Yeah, something completely different.
He had gone through, like, Freya, Dara, like, all these ridiculous long names, and then she was just like, it's Mary.
Yeah. Yeah.
The hardest name to remember.
He's getting up there in years. He doesn't care anymore at all.
I honestly just shows his disrespect for women more so anything else. Just in general, he has a huge disrespect for women. And it showed by the way he was talking about Talisa in the beginning and said, you know, I don't blame you for, you know, committing treason for this firm body and his other glorious vocabulary that he used.
He does not like saggy boobs.
No.
Apparently not.
No.
But we saw that in the first season, too, when we first meet Walder Frey, just how completely disrespectful he is to women. You also see that there.
Yeah, he there's a lot of parallels between him and Craster. And just
There are. I was thinking
that's
about that,
point.
Too.
Mm.
And something else I was thinking about, even though this is jumping the gun a little bit, is how this is the 9th episode of season 3, and this was the big giant episode of craziness happening. And that kind of was a parallel to season 1, where the 9th episode was Ned Stark getting his head chopped off. And I was just thinking, wow, that's kind of the way they ended it. Both seasons, horrible things happening to the Starks. 9th episode to lead into the 10th, where you're kind of like, wow, did that really just happen?
I think the Starks are by far most people's favorite family, so it makes sense to kill off the characters that we all love. And the worst part about it was Ned was actually brought up in this episode when they were talking about naming the child, so it was kind of like foreshadowing in that moment.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, that was a little heartbreaking.
Yeah, it was totally heartbreaking. Is they were going to name
died.
It Eddard?
Ned died
twice! Twice! In both of the episode 9s. You're absolutely right. Oh.
Ned born again? Nope.
Oh, well.
Man.
Sad stuff. So.
By the way, guys, I have my Twitter up if you want to tweet at me. And Stark Naked said, oh, my God. Even before we started watching, so I knew that he was watching it before we did.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So there's a quote. The wine will flow red. And the quote, this is from Walder Frey. Quote, the wine will flow red and the music will play loud. So he's alludes to it as well there. There's a foreshadow there. So because we're playing music here and we have Phil here, let's jump into a show from Maria Menounos, Serial Buddies, which
not just a
got
show.
Released.
Some
not
might call
a
it a movie.
A film.
Some might call it a movie. That's how long that show is.
Film, are you actually in the shot right now? That's my real question.
Right there, baby.
Okay, I wasn't sure if it was pointing that way.
Of course.
So you're looking nice tonight. I like
well, thank
setup.
You, guys. I dressed up for the audio people.
Film, let's get this. Let's hear a little bit about Serial Buddies, because I think you've got a lot of awesome
stuff to say.
Here's
what I'm
going to
tie into, right? I don't follow Game of Thrones as much as I should have, but, you know, now that everyone's basically killed off the show, you guys need to come. You as fans need something a little bit lighter that's, you know, still has a lot of killing in it.
That's about
come
killers.
Off. Yes. Adventures of Serial Buddies, a movie made by Marie Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, and, in fact, a lot of the people here from AfterBuzz TV, is available on iTunes and streaming through SerialBuddies.com. We've by popular demand, we've actually lowered the price. It's only $4.99, so it's a Ooh. It's a steal at that price. And again, it's the first serial killer buddy comedy ever. And you guys would enjoy it.
If you haven't seen it yet, don't be the last one to see it.
So if you thought The Red Wedding was funny, this movie is for you.
I am sold.
I actually downloaded it on my flight back last night because I just wanted to see it twice. So download it before you get on that airplane.
I mean, there's references to boobs. I know you guys are talking
Lots
about boobs.
Game over.
There's killing. There isn't anything. Well, everything is in there. And you have Henry Winkler, Christopher Lloyd, Artie Lang, Beth Bears from Two Broke Girls, Kathy Lee Gifford, and of course Maria Menounos, among many, many other stars. It's funny. Available now, Adventure of the Serial Buddies. If you don't know how to find it, go to serialbuddies.com, and you can misspell serial to
oh, yeah,
be the regular
it is
serial.
S-E-R. For cereal, not C-E-R. Although, that type of cereal is amazing, too.
But either one works. You can plug in either one, it'll take you there.
I eat cereal every day, so therefore I need to watch Cereal Buddies.
That's right. So thank you, guys. Back to your regular programming.
All right.
Thanks, Phil.
So again, that's
thank
Cereal
you.
Buddies by many of the AfterBuzz crew, so definitely make sure to check that out. And
so I have Josh that just tweeted at me, and he said, I had been suspicious of Talisa, suspecting she was a spying for someone. I really felt like an asshole that happened.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
I agree with you, Josh, by the way.
I think a lot of people thought she was spying throughout
this
season.
Yeah, there were all these rumors going on that because she was she had a different name and everything, there were all these spy theories, mm-hmm. and is she working with the Lannisters? And But just to kill her first off, it was just like, hey, you, all you people who think all this stuff, up yours. Like, it was just...
So, Potter fan on the chat says the whole scene was traumatizing. Definitely a little bit traumatizing there.
Definitely going to leave the lights on when I go to sleep tonight.
But let's kind of jump over a little bit before we talk about the whole wedding scene. And by the way, Edmure the whole time looked kind of nervous because we still haven't been introduced as bride yet. But let's jump and talk a little bit about Arya because she's on her way to the twins. And she's heading over with the Hound. And first they run over to this guy with a wheelbarrow. And the Hound knocks him unconscious. And the plan is to sneak in as this guy with pig to bring pig to the feast.
He's a pig farmer. Until he eats them all.
Until the Hound eats them all. But we see Arya bring out her sassy badassery a couple times.
I love the relationship between these two. She's so hardcore, he's so hardcore, and they butt heads in such a wonderful, can I say serial killer buddy way?
You absolutely
I think
can.
You can. I think okay. that does relate here.
Yes, because these two are just going to murder everyone.
You know what? I think that they see each other the way they both want to be seen. And they also see, like, their faults in each other. And she calls him out, and he calls her out. And I think it's great to have a friend like that. And I really saw the relationship developing here, especially when she asked him not to kill him. And for once, he actually listened.
Yeah, that's true. And then she goes and knocks him out right afterwards.
Well, what was funny about that was he was telling her in that moment that you're too kind and someday that's going to come back and you're going to get killed because of your kindness. And then the guy wakes up and she knocks him out too, which obviously proves the Hound wrong in that moment.
Yeah, and I agree with you. It is a great moment between the. I like the dynamic that plays off mm-hmm. between the two of them throughout all the scenes. And they end up arriving to the wedding as the pig farmers and they can't get in because the feast is about over, basically, and they're just told that the feast is over, they can't get in. And let's jump back to the wedding scene. Shift on over back to the wedding mm-hmm. happening at the same time. So we're at the wedding where Edmure's ready-ish. He's still pretty Frey. We still haven't met his maybe lovely bride, Rosalind Frey. We still haven't met her. And she's introduced, and she's the only Frey that's pretty. The only one.
Score.
So maybe if you guys haven't or watching the show, did anyone like get kind of nervous there? Why was Edmure Frey, or Edmure Tully, sorry, why was Edmure Tully given the only pretty Frey? Because I know, and if you read the novel, Catelyn was really worried at that point. She was like, what is he playing here? What's the angle? What's he trying to do? Mm. So I'm wondering if anyone who watched kind of thought about that, too. Like, why did Edmure get to happen to have a pretty one?
I mean, it was all too good to be true from the beginning.
Exactly. Walder was definitely on his best behavior. Everything was... He's trying to make it all nice, nice, and you know,
as the best behavior that Walder Frey can have.
Yes, Walder Frey can have, but he was definitely trying to do everything right. Like we mentioned before, as soon as they came in, the opening shot was them eating the food. And then give him the most beautiful daughter he has, and everything. He was just best behavior.
I'm not even convinced that was his daughter. That was probably just someone he didn't mind killing, because I'm guessing we didn't get to see what happened in the bedroom, but I'm sure it was nothing less than blood.
That's a good point. We actually didn't see anything from that.
That's very true. They did get married, and I would think from Walder Frey's perspective, having one of his daughters marry the Tullys, the Strong House, it would be a strategic point. So I think it would be his daughter, but...
Yeah.
And do you think that Edmure survived this Red Wedding?
Well, I mean, we can't say, because, read the books, not good to say, but...
Because they definitely left,
But they are definitely out of the scene. But we get this really snide look that Walder Frey gives Rob at during the wedding, which is a pretty funny look, because he's sort of like, see, there is a hot one.
Yeah. Well, I felt like he was mocking Rob this entire episode, honestly. I mean, even when Rob gave that great speech at the beginning where he was like, you know, this will end any feud between us. And he just started clapping. It was just like, it was a joke from the beginning. And
yeah,
he was
totally
mocking him the entire time. And then it was kind of like Rob was trying to... Like, when he was involved in the bedding ceremony, he was trying to act like, okay, we're friends, even though he was very hesitant. You could see it.
That's a great point. And Devin Lamar on the chat about the look says, love the look Walder gave Rob. So people also notice that little look that he gives. But something I was thinking about, too, is you kind of get the difference between Tyrion's wedding from last week's episode, or 2 weeks ago's episode, which I guess would be last week's if you're watching on DVD, and this week's episode. So just how different it was, where this one's much more normal and no issues supposedly putting on the cloak. Yeah, thank you, the cloak for Rosalind. So a much more normal wedding here, not quite so tense, not as much tension. And then the wedding feast actually starts, and we get to see everyone's perspective and where they're at. And Edmure Tully's looking pretty excited there. He's actually happy that he has a pretty bride.
He is pumped.
He didn't do anything, but his eyes just stayed on her, like up and down.
And just
up
smiling.
And oh, yeah.
Lots of elevator action.
There was a moment she looked away, and he's just like,
Bedding ceremony.
And we get an interesting thing here. Lord Bolton, who had said to Jaime he was heading to this wedding, is here at the wedding, and he's hanging out with Catelyn, Blackfish, hanging out with them at the wedding.
And the best part was he said he wasn't going to drink, which he said the reasoning was because it dulls his senses, and which I took at the time, I was like, oh yeah, that's why I don't drink too. But it makes sense to me that he didn't want his senses dulled for battle.
Yeah, I think Kyle and I gave each other a little look there.
Yeah.
We're like, ooh. Yeah, so a lot of foreshadowing, too. But, I mean, it was all stuff which is really cool. It was stuff that was foreshadowing without making it obvious. And I really feel like until the point where they changed the music, if you hadn't read it, I think it was really great foreshadowing without, as I said, making it so you would know that this was going to happen.
There was so much wonderful buildup. As a book reader and knowing it was going to happen, you're just waiting for that first arrow. You're waiting for that first sword.
Yeah.
And there was so much buildup. I was like, oh, is it now?
Yeah.
No? Okay, there's more to do. Is it now? It had me on the edge of my seat, even though I knew it was coming. I think they did a fantastic job in filming that.
I thought they were going to gut Talisa in the opening scene whenever Walter Frey actually called her up to step forward. I was ready for the arrows to be pulled.
Yeah,
right,
you were
then
definitely like, oh, bad choice. And I was going to think that, too, because, I mean, and as we said, the novel, she's not there. It's just like, oh, that's an interesting choice to bring her. Because they didn't do it in the book because they thought it would be a slight against the Freys, and that's why they didn't take her. But we get Rob eating with Talisa during the wedding, and they're flirting with each other back and forth, and Talisa stops Rob from going too far because she doesn't want to slight them.
Smart move.
Didn't end up mattering, but smart.
I'm glad they spent that last time together.
Yeah, at least they had some fun moments together.
That's when you know Weiss and Benioff are writing the episode, because if George was writing it, they never would have had that final kiss.
Oh. Yeah, people in the chat were saying before that George R.R. Martin is insane. That's what people in the chat were saying, because this whole scene. So after that, we get the bedding ceremony that starts happening, which is foreign to Talisa.
yeah, it's certainly something new and different, but we also get the Edmure's classic line. What did he say? Once you unleash the monster, ladies, you can't put it back in the cage.
Classic.
I was just like, well, okay, RR.
Yeah. Very much a Games of Thrones-y line.
Yeah, he's such a frat boy, that Edmure.
Oh, totally. Totally a frat boy attitude.
Is there a Game of Thrones porno yet? Because you could just take lines straight from each of the episodes. They would just not even have to write a script. It could just be an assembly of all the lines that are in the season.
People in the live chat, start coming up with names. Go.
The Game of Bones is the only one that comes to mind.
All right, there we go. Quick one there. So we then get this scene that we talked about before where Talisa and Rob are hanging back, and Talisa points out that how pregnant she is, and if it's a son, she wants to name it Eddard after the late Eddard Stark. Mm-hmm. So kind of this tender moment that you get before the music switches. And we get this switch of music, Kristen, that you really noticed. You were just like, uh-oh, what is this?
I was so unsettled by it. And just like Kat's face, just looking up, I was just like, okay, do something. Do something. You see, like, everything happening. She saw the door closing. She lifted up, I mean, Lord Bolton's sleeve and saw he had armor. Like, she was just, like, a few moments too late. But the entire time, she had been suspicious. So I wish there was a little bit more of a battle there. I mean, because it was just, it all happened in a moment of seconds.
But I guess they were they'd been drinking. They didn't have their weapons with them because they thought they were at this peaceful moment where they don't have to worry because they got in the food. They just were under the impression that this is an honorable thing that you would never break. And the reason I kept on talking about the past weeks with Daenerys breaking these honor-bound codes and how that was kind of a big deal to me and how it made me kind of like Daenerys a little bit less is because of things like this, where it's just like it's all these things that you sort of expect. And when someone breaks it, so this one honor-bound thing, yes, it's a way to win a war, but it kind of makes you come off a little bit more villainous.
It certainly does. It's such a big law in the world once you eat on somebody's house, and to just break it, it's horrible. It's I don't know. Catelyn's so nervous about it, and I think that's a big reason why she doesn't act right away, because she's really like, no, we did this. He there's no way he can break this law, and she just kept putting it off and putting it off, and eventually it was just too late, and she's couldn't do anything.
I agree with all of that, and I think I also agree with you, Dave, in saying that Daenerys is kind of villainous. But guess what? The villain sometimes is victorious.
No, I don't disagree with that at all. I mean, sometimes they're victorious, and then you also get the classic idea of everyone who wins, history is written by the winner, the victor. So no matter what happened in the past, history is written by the victor. So there are people that we think of as heroes who might have been more villainous than we really think of them
as. That's a great point. I think most of the winners are always playing at a corner, playing the angles. You kind of have to in life in general. That's another subject.
We do get there was this little blink and you miss it moment. I think someone had a silver mermaid pin.
And
there's a family called the Manderly family who their mermaid is their thing. And I kind of had a little nerd moment.
Yeah, no, it's great when they throw out little things like that for when you're watching, for the people who have read, to be like, oh my God. Okay. I'm glad they threw that in there.
It's nice. And did you see Rob's cloak clasp, the two wolf heads?
Yeah. Well, I also love the banners as they were when we first see them entering House Tully. You see the Stark banners flying, which was cool to me. Just that opening scene of like, I mean, I'm sure people know at this point the direwolf's the sigil, but when you see the direwolf on the banners as they're entering, it's like, all right, cool, direwolves are coming. That's the big deal. But yeah, so as the music starts, we get the doors close and are locked as the guard walks by, and Walder Frey comes up to have a little speech.
Oh man, I can't even talk about it. I'm crying. Thanks for having me on the most happiest episode of the season.
We're like, you know, it'd be a great time to have Kyle on the harshest episode of the season. And by the way, Kristen Lyons fan on the chat agrees with you about about the music you didn't like. He says he agrees because it was very uncomfortable at that point that the music starts. So things get really tense here, and then that's when Catelyn notices the chainmail on Edmure Tully. Is at that point? Roose Bolton.
Roose Bolton.
Yeah, Edmure Tully's off having fun, as far as we know.
Checking out his lady.
Yeah, on Roose Bolton. So Roose Bolton's in on it, and we get little Eddard Stark gets it. Oh, he just gets it.
Man, I guess there's no heir to the North now. Jeez. I don't even know what to say. It's it was so brutal they took her out. It was such a moment as a reader. It's like, she's not supposed to be there. And then just to slaughter her first. There were all these rumors. Is she going to escape? Is she going to... And then they just take her out first. And I was like, holy crap. They were really...
Yeah, especially, like you said, first one to go. And you're just like, wow. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's what happened. And then Catelyn immediately gets shot with an arrow. Rob gets shot with a bunch of arrows. And people just start going down like flies because all the musicians... And again, in the novel, it was very point that how bad the musicians were. Because the point is, they weren't actually musicians. They were really trained archers.
Archers.
So they're up there shooting people down from the rafters.
They did a pretty good job of playing, I got to say.
Lady Friend Love says, red bedding. Love the name.
Stark Naked I'm on Twitter. If you want to tweet at me, at Cinematic Escape. Stark Naked says that George R.R. Martin is the Zodiac Killer.
they finally found him all these years.
He's writing his diaries in Game of Thrones.
So this really was, to me, though, the harshest moment. Because as you said, Kristen, many people love the Starks. I'm one of those people. Mm-hmm. I love the Starks. They've always been my favorite family since the first season. I mean, like, I love Tyrion, too, but the Starks have been consistently my favorite. So when all this happened, I was just like, no! And hasn't Catelyn suffered enough? She's lost every kid at this point, as far as she knows. She thinks she's lost every kid. So that's why she was just going crazy when she thought she was going to lose Rob.
Yeah, she lost it. And you could see, I mean, she lost her mind when she grabs a little girl and threatens to slice her throat. It's just, she's gone. She's just lost it.
But she says, honor her honor as a Tully and her Stark, and they keep their honor to the very end.
Oh, you think Walder Frey thinks the Starks have honor?
No, not at this point. But maybe the Tullys do. Maybe he still thinks the Tullys do.
Yeah, there we go.
I don't know, but I am just, like, still speechless from that scene. Because as you guys are talking about it, I'm just seeing it replay in my mind. And it's one of those, like, terrible things that you actually don't want to be replaying in your mind. Like, it was so epic. And just, like, the visual effects were mind-blowing.
Oh, yeah. And as the throats are being slit.
And they're spraying blood.
Yeah. I mean, that was incredibly graphic. And we're going to get to the whole Daenerys scene later. But the Daenerys scene where they were storming Yunkai, I was surprised how ungraphic it was.
Mm-hmm.
And here's why. Because this scene was so graphic.
There was blood, I think, in every storyline.
So I have a question for you guys. Where'd the Blackfish go?
I was wondering that, too. I guess he must have been murdered if he was in that room, but you don't really see it happen. I was curious what happened to the Blackfish as well.
Yeah, they don't show him getting killed, as far as I know.
They don't show him or Edmure, so those are kind of the questions in the air.
Yeah, we know Edmure went to the room, so, I mean, he's got somewhere to be. Blackfish has just vanished.
Maybe he was helping with the bedding.
He ran up, he's like, I'm in on this!
I don't know.
He is a Tully, so maybe rat boy mentality.
After all those ladies gave him the look, and he was like, oh, no. I don't know if he wants to be in that room.
Well, Rosalind.
Oh,
yeah,
so
okay, so he likes the young lady. Yeah.
Jeffrey Lambert asked, where was Jingle Bell? And Jingle Bell, for those of you who don't know, is the mentally handicapped Frey who is jingling around in the novels, and he was absent from the show. I guess you just don't need his character.
Yeah,
really.
He was the jester that Catelyn grabs at the end and puts the knife to his throat.
So yeah, it was actually the jester, not Walder's current wife. Current wife. But Walder doesn't care. He's just like, well, I'll find another one.
Yeah, how many wives has he had?
Right, like it's obvious something that from Catelyn's first talk to him in season one that this is something Walder would not care about.
Yeah, yeah. I just knew as soon as he's like, your wife, and I'm like, oh, Catelyn, come on, you're smarter than this.
Yeah. Have some laughter in the booth.
Laughter from Steven in the booth. So yeah, right away Rob gets murdered, so then she slits the Frey girl's throat.
He did say mother right before. That was sort of...
Yeah.
I was not expecting
but
that.
He was just...
What was that?
Did you hear him?
No.
He looked at Kat and he was just like, mother, right before they killed him.
Oh, Rob did?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Stellar Dream on the chat says, I'm going to be so crushed if Blackfish dies too, or died too. And Natasha Velez is laughing my ass off at Kurt. What did Kurt say on the chat? Oh, Talisa's doomed her baby to die the second she named him Ned. Neds don't live through episode 9.
I was kind of thinking
that. I'm glad I got to that.
I was like, every time there's a Ned, everybody's going to die.
He also has a good point. All the jesters were cut out of the show from the book, and that's true. There are a lot of jesters in the book. Right. There's jesters over at Dragonstone. There's jesters at... The main area, so...
The Tyrells have one.
Yeah, it's just everywhere there's a lot of gestures in the books that have been cut out. And maybe it could be considered offensive, too, because they're usually the mentally handicapped characters.
Possibly.
Maybe, yeah. It was just probably a timing thing or just an issue of we don't need this character.
They don't need him, yeah.
Yeah, Devin was most sad whenever the wolf died.
Yeah, and the wolf dies, too, after that. But think about this, too. It ends as... Catelyn's throat is slit and she falls over and then there's no music in the credits. And I think this is the first time in Game of Thrones we've had no music in the credits.
I don't know, when it jumped to the Bear and the Maiden fair rock style. It wasn't quite that.
That was pretty rough. And that, by rough, I mean I didn't like it. That's what I mean.
It was just like that.
Yeah, that's what I mean by that. So, yeah, we get murder all across those. So Arya witnesses then the direwolf, Rob's direwolf, get shot with arrows and crossbows. Because, I mean, they're not going to take any chances because that thing is a beast, literally.
Yeah, and do they explain why the wolf is in a pen in the show?
They didn't in the show, so do you want to go ahead and explain what that is?
I'm trying to remember. It was,
Rob's
Jane,
coming in.
But who is Talisa? Isn't Talisa uncomfortable with the wolf?
She's uncomfortable with the wolf, but the reason, at least in the novel, that the wolf's in a pen as opposed to coming into the castle is because as Rob comes into the castle... his direwolf is really nervous and can sense something's wrong, so it attacks one of the Freys, right? Or it causes one of the Freys' horses, not attacks, it causes one of the Freys' horses to get nervous and the horse buckles one of the Freys.
Okay.
So they take that as an offense and won't let his direwolf in, so they lock it up with all the dogs.
There you go. I really thought that Arya was going to get to it.
I know.
I was like, oh, she's going to let him out and then he's going to try to save the day and get murdered, but he didn't even make it out of the cage.
He didn't. But another hound did.
Jeffrey Lambert hated when Grey Wolf died, or Grey Wind, North remembers, correct? Grey Wind.
That's what Devin said. She said that, or he, Devin could be a guy or female, she said that they felt the worst at that moment.
Max Starr points this out. Penises saved two lives tonight. Edmure, who was using it as a sword. And Blackfish. And Blackfish, who was using it to piss. So that's where he was. I forgot about that. He left to go take a piss at the tree.
Did he have a line about
that? Yeah, he had a line where he said, I gotta go take a piss, and went to a tree.
Oh,
I forgot about that. So thank you for throwing that out there, Max Starr.
Oh, nice. Thank you.
Yeah, that's where Blackfish was that whole time. So there you go. That's why he wasn't there. Yeah,
that's good, because he's outside where murders are happening as well. The Stark men are getting killed outside as well, but he at least has an escape.
Right, at least he's not trapped in that room of ultimate death
and
chaos. But we get Arya, who's then afterwards trying to run in, wants to run in so badly and save everybody, or at least meet with her mom, and gets knocked out by the Hound.
He's like, it's too late.
It was so close. It's just...
I feel like he's her new wolf, by the way.
So close, grasping there. But wow. He's been the...
That's kind of deep.
Yeah, and now it's a dog instead of a wolf.
He's the new Nymeria.
He has been the one, though, that's protecting all these Stark girls, too. Because first it was Sansa, and now he's just been watching over and protecting Arya from everything. So he's been very much a protector, even though Arya still doesn't trust him.
Wow, that's kind of cool, actually. I never thought about that. The two girls both lost their wolves, and... they've got a dog protecting them. And that's kind of a neat little thing. Wow.
Thanks, guys.
Wow, really?
That's why we're doing this show. We all learn things.
There you go.
So, man, rough time with the Stark end of things. But we had a lot going on in the rest of the episode, too. So let's go ahead and jump over to Essos, where Daenerys is hanging out with her war council. So Dario, who's being flirty with her, as always.
Arr.
And Jorah, who's visually not happy about this.
So friend-zoned, that poor Jorah.
Aww. So, yeah, they're conversing in war strategies to try and break into Yunkai.
Okay.
And Jorah doesn't trust Dario.
No, Dario's got this master plan going on that he has friends at the back door and they'll let him in and he does it all the time or whatnot. And it's this very, we'll just take a couple guys, we'll take the two best warriors, which Jorah instantly thinks is himself.
Of course.
He's like, yeah, we'll go into the city and then we'll take everybody out, we'll open the front door and then your army can come in. And so Jorah just doesn't trust him because it's too easy or it's too few men. And then, I mean, why was he so mad? Because if they kill Jorah and Grey Worm, then Dany's gonna lose. Like,
apparently, that's what he her counselor.
Is he so full of himself that Dany, if you lose me, you're gonna lose this war?
Pretty much, that's what he was saying, which is obviously not the truth, but in his mind,
there we go. It's just puffing up his chest for Dany. Yeah,
because she clearly goes to him for advice all the time.
Oh yeah,
clearly,
it's gotta be him. Yeah. It's gotta be Jorah.
And then Dario grabs her hand and moves it over the map. Yeah, and, he is losing it.
Jorah's just watching with the eyes like. No. What are you doing?
I'm so surprised Jorah didn't just swing his sword the opposite direction when they were fighting those other guys.
Oh,
but they worked well under pressure. The teamwork was.
They did. I mean, Grey Worm convinced them to follow through on Dario's plan, and they go into the city, and the three of them were badass.
Yeah, that was an awesome scene to witness and see. That was an awesome scene to check out.
It was really cool. I was like, oh, they're just going to talk their way out of this or something. They just took out that whole first wave. Great, we got to see Grey Worm in action. He was whipping around that sword like Donatello.
I think it was a lance, though, right?
Awesome. It was a lance. I just had my Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
But Donatello didn't use a sword either. That was a bow staff.
Did I say sword?
Kyle,
oh, God,
on.
I'm sorry.
I
didn't mean to say sword.
I was
so nervous. Oh, gosh.
Oh, man. This podcast is ruined. I'm done.
Sorry, guys. I'm out. Later.
But awesome, man. It was so cool watching all them in action. And Dario, I never really thought curved swords were that badass before. I've always been a fan of the I've always loved swords when I was a kid, and I never really liked curved swords. And watching Dario utilize that curved sword like a badass, I was like, man, maybe I kind of do like curved swords now. That was amazing.
Well, that was the Arrak of the Dothraki.
We saw it before, too, this was, like, a lot of awesome usage and multiple enemies at once, so...
Yeah.
Man, he's an awesome fighter.
They were all badass. Even Jorah was much better than I thought.
Yeah, well, Jorah's a good fighter. I mean, last time he got hit in the armor and it saved his life.
Has he ever been proven to be that good? He just...
Well, he got...
He says he is.
He did...
Come on.
He says he is.
Well, he did fight off...
He
did fight off the one Dothraki guy in season one, although he did get hit in his armor.
Yeah, he had a suit of armor on.
But that's the difference of fighting styles. That's his fighting style. He gets to have a suit of armor, but he's not as quick.
Yeah, it's true.
And he won, so I guess his style of fighting won out.
But he didn't have the suit on this time.
Yeah, true.
You can't have a clinky suit when you're sneaking into a city. But so then the second wave comes out, right? The second wave of guys, and we don't see that battle.
Yeah. Well,
now, I was confused. Was that the second wave of guards from that city, or was that the Unsullied that was behind them waiting to get in?
It was a different set of slaves from the Yunkai slaves, I believe.
Yes, that's what I thought it was as well. But
So Kerpop has an important observation. Dave 1, Kyle 0 in the Game of Turtles. From the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles references.
Don't invite me onto the Turtles podcast.
I think it was slaves, as we were saying, from the Yunkai slaves. But it sounds like they sided with, as Dario predicted, they sided with them, and I think they ended up throwing down their weapons from the explanation afterwards.
That's what it sounded like, but what did Dario say? He's like, oh, the freer of slaves has arrived, throw down your weapons? I guess that's what he said, right?
Yeah, I think they threw down their weapons, and they ended up siding with all of them instead.
Okay.
That second wave. I think that's what I got from that conversation.
Yeah, it seemed a little too easy. I mean, maybe.
I know, I agreed. But maybe they saw the first round get slaughtered and also just didn't want to go have the same fate. But maybe that would, like, they respected them for that.
Yeah.
Maybe. They're no Unsullied, so they'll throw down their weapons.
but let's, yeah, exactly. Unsullied, never.
Never.
Never. But let's also throw out, too, when Dario gets back, or when Jorah gets back, triumphant. Daenerys just wants to know where Dario is.
Oh, she's got a crush.
And Jorah, not too happy, Dario is the one triumphantly walks in and drops the pouch and says, we've taken the city.
Yeah, was that the flag of Yunkai?
I believe so. Yeah.
With the Valkyrie on it there?
Because it was like, the city is yours.
The harpy on it, excuse me.
Red Betting says, Dario looks like a 90s hairband rocker.
Well, he's actually a rapper. If you guys know that, there's a rap video of him out there. Yes, that actor has done rap videos.
Steven?
So you gotta look that up.
The more you know. See, we're all learning things. It was learning session here.
Talk about learning. We should talk about the John Lovitz Club.
Yeah, let's talk about the John Lovitz Club. So next week on Sunday, or if whenever you guys are listening, maybe this upcoming Sunday for the season finale, June 9th. AfterBuzz is actually going to be at the John Lovitz Center doing the show live in front of a live audience. And if you guys want to come, you should. It's at the John Lovitz Center in Universal
Comedy
City Walk.
Club. It's the Comedy Club at City Walk.
Right, at Universal City Walk. And If you guys want to get tickets, you can go on to the John Lovitz Comedy Club's website, enter in the promo code ABTV, and it's $5 off. And you should come join us. We're going to have a bunch of special guests. Kristen, you want to name a couple of them for us?
Oh, yeah. Just a Ryder Strong from Boy Meets World.
Kristen's favorite. Kristen's favorite.
Oh, down.
Eric Layden from The Killing.
Who also joined us on episode 10 last season, if you guys watched that. He's a huge fan.
Yeah, so these are celebrity fans will be there to break down the episode with us. And who knows, maybe a few other special guests.
So
just have to come to see.
You'll have to come check us out. If you guys live in the L.A. area.
Or if you don't fly in, it's not too late.
Rob Gold, L.A. area, come check it out. So
I'm coming.
Sweet.
I want to be there. Let's do it.
Yeah, so.
We got one seat filled. Yes. Go buy your, seriously though, guys, like there are limited tickets. So don't hesitate to go on the website and get those tickets.
Yeah, definitely
and
come check it out.
And we will meet you next Sunday. If you come, we'd really love to meet you guys.
Yeah, we'd definitely love to say hi to everyone who enjoys the show.
Dave has run into our fans a few times at the Grove.
But, yeah.
And they just recognized his voice, apparently.
It was
and
just
then
the
they
voice.
Turned around and they saw him.
Nice. Just the voice.
Like, who is that?
I was
who
at Umami Burger.
But yeah, guys, we'd love to see you and meet you in person. And break down the show with you and take your fan questions live in the studio.
Awesome. I have to come because I have to meet the person whose seat I always steal.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. There'll be a chance for you to be Sarah Stretton.
Because she's going to punch
Sarah's
me in the
never
face.
Here at the same time as Kyle.
Nope.
So, yeah, sadly, as you guys know, Sarah's not here, but she will be here next week. So, and Kyle will be here too. Whoa.
Yeah.
No, it's going to be crazy.
This is going to be some crazy stuff going on.
I'll be at the bar.
Yeah.
And we're all going to be wearing red. Maybe not.
And we're going to lock the door so no one can get out.
Yeah,
as
exactly.
We play the Reigns of Cash.
There actually is a upper level to it. So, look, we might have a band. We might just
there might
double
be
check
some,
for archers.
Yeah,
you guys, you want people to come. What the heck are you doing?
No, I mean, if you guys are trained archer, you should come. Wait, what am I saying? No, we're not going to have any of that.
Musicians
come.
There's going to be that and more. And so just come and hang out with us, really. We just love you guys, so
yeah,
come hang next Sunday.
Come hang, come
John
chill.
Lovitz Club, Universal City.
And that would be, I believe, the events. We're going to watch the show with you guys. Check it out on the John Lovitz Comedy Center. We're going to watch the shows with you guys and right afterwards do the after show. So we're actually going to be watching right there with you guys, too. So with that said, let's go ahead and talk about the Bran storyline because Bran is up in the north and... He is making his way to try and pass over to the North and North. I'm going to call it the North and North, two words. And they run into an abandoned windmill, and they decide to go take shelter there as a storm starts brewing. Hodor having none of it.
Hodor! He had so much to say this episode, I did not make a tally mark, but it was a
Hodor.
Lot.
Hodor!
Yeah, he doesn't like the storm, and he is, Hodor.
Not at all. Yes, yeah, so and the storm starts brooding, and we find out that he's afraid of storms, and while this is all going on, while we find out that we're afraid of storms, we got John Ygritte and Tormund Giantsbane. So awesome because he's the Giantsbane.
Yeah.
And they come across an old man with horses on the parallel end, and they want to kill him and steal all of his horses. And the wildlings don't really understand the idea of breeding horses because normally in the wild you would steal someone's horses.
That's true, mm-hmm. Yes.
So they don't quite get this notion, but they want to kill this old man, and John is completely against it.
Yeah, of course. I mean, these people are helping this man is greatly helping the Night's Watch, and John is obviously still a crow, so there's no way he wants to do this. And you see him try to talk his way out, and he's, what did he say? He said, if you just steal the horses, they'll just send a couple of men after you for thieves. But if you kill them, they'll send a lot of men after you for being a murderer. Tormund Giantsbane says, perfect.
Yeah, great line. Another thing is, too, like I mean, obviously, Rob just doesn't want to do it, but...
I mean, John.
Or John. Man, Rob.
Bo-staff.
He's still in my mind.
Bo-staff, not sword. Bo-staff.
Still in my Bo-staff, yeah. Now you, Kyle, won V0 in the Game of Thrones front.
I think I just always win. You guys are always getting it wrong.
Kristen
clearly.
Has 5, though, on both ends of the front. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle size, she has like 10 or 20.
Yeah. I was actually born a turtle.
I didn't know that. This is... Wow. Well, you got like super evolved because you look even more human than the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That's crazy.
What are we talking about?
This is what we do. So yeah, John, totally against this idea. And really, when you think about it, though, the idea is you kill this old man so he can't do what he tries to do—go and run away to tell the Night's Watch what happened.
Is that where he was going?
Well, we don't know if that's where he's going, but that's where
he
could have been going.
I think he had a secret mission. I think he was going to a sewer.
I think he was I think he was trying to go to the twins because he heard about the Red Wedding and he was panicking. I have to make it to the twins.
Let Rob Stark know.
No. Yeah.
There's safety in the sewers. And turtles.
No, he is definitely heading to the Night's Watch.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's where he's going. He's just warn him about the wildlings, because a large group of wildlings on that side of the wall is just bad news.
Yeah, so we get this chase going on, and they end up at the very same windmill that Bran is at with Bran when Jojen and the Reeds. And as this happens, Hodor just starts flipping the F out.
Yeah.
And he's like, stands up, Hodor! And you can hear it over the thunderstorm. And Bran all of a sudden goes white eyes and becomes Hodor. Whoa.
Yeah, he...
taking Warg to the next
level.
That's
pretty crazy. And we actually we learn the significance of that later in the scene when Bran asks... oh my gosh, his name's escaping me.
Jojen.
Jojen, yes, thank you. Jojen.
11 points.
We're keeping tally.
He asked Jojen if people do that beyond the wall, if they warg into the minds of other people. And Jojen says, no, they don't do that anywhere. So, Bran, it's a really significant moment.
And Chris Mancini says, Bran's storyline is going to grow. Bran is starting to act like a lord, more than Rob, and obviously without the fight.
Oh, see, because on the live chat, his response was Hodor, so apparently he tweets out a lot more to you.
Thanks, Chris.
Now we get the translation. That's what Hodor means.
Hodor?
Yeah, apparently Hodor means everything Kristen just read. That's the translation. It gets sent to Kristen's tweets.
Nice.
I speak Hodor.
You guys are all over this Twitter. Tweet me too, Mad Canard. Come on, guys.
What is yours?
At Mad Canard.
At Mad Canard. Yeah. Come on, tweet Kyle, guys.
Or tweet me.
No, don't tweet.
At the Dave Klein. Or do in the live chat too. I'm up on the live chat with you guys. So, yeah, we get... him becoming Hodor crazy, and he gets Hodor to shut up, so mission accomplished.
Oh, by making the whites of his eyes show, that creeps me out, by the way.
Yeah, that was freaking you out. And then...
and what about when Jon killed one of the wildlings? His eyes did it too. Is that just, you know, what happens when you die? It was just weird to me, or is he a warg too?
Well, we had seen Orel warg. Well, the very first time we met Orel, he was warging into the bird above.
Yeah,
it's when Tormund told him, and he had the whites in his eyes.
So,
and
did he turn into that hawk that was attacking?
Yeah,
Joe,
presumably.
Yes. John,
yes.
At the end.
Yes.
Okay.
There was actually a line a few episodes ago where John threatened Orel, and he goes, "If I kill you, do you live? Do you go into that bird or whatnot?" We didn't really get an answer, but we saw as he was dying, or because he died, I'm not quite
right,
sure.
Something
he,
to that extent.
His mind went into the bird and
very cool.
Instantly attacked John and scratched up his face.
Yeah, the eye stuff is really creepy, which this is a bit of a side, but I just want to point it out there. I was at the optometrist over the weekend, and they were touching my eye, which freaks me out more than anything. Turns out I'm from the Chicago area. The receptionist was freaking out because I apparently go to the same optometrist as D.B. Weiss. From the Chicago area. Who knew? So I just wanted to throw that out there. I thought it was kind of fun. Random story. Sorry to
And so now he's coming on the
that.
Show, right?
And
Dave?
So now he may be a special guest.
Maybe. He also may be in Ireland. One of the two.
Or getting his eyes checked.
Or getting his eyes checked
we
in Chicago.
We will know soon.
One of the three. But yeah, so we're a lot of warg happening in this episode, and then Bran becomes I believe Summer. And I think Ghost was there as well.
I think Ghost
Summer, and Summer are there.
And Shaggy Dog.
And Shaggy Dog's there. So direwolves take it over. But he does that as in the scene where Jon makes the decision that he cannot kill this old man because the wildlings want him to kill him. And he cannot do it. So then Ygritte does it. He's like, Ygritte just shoots the guy.
Yeah, just takes him out and... yeah, but instantly, it doesn't even matter, because instantly the wildlings are like, well, he's still a crow, let's kill him.
Yeah, what I didn't get is when Ygritte was standing up to help Jon actually kill the other wildlings, he actually hit her so that she fell back behind him, but that didn't help him. Like, why didn't he let her shoot her own kind? That's what she would have done.
Because they would have killed her.
Yeah, but they attacked her then when she was on the ground. So him pushing her on the ground didn't help things.
But like, he wasn't attacking her. He was holding her back. Right.
I think John just didn't want Ygritte to die inside with him. I would imagine that's where John's mind was at. It was he just wanted to get Ygritte out of everything and not involve her in it.
I got that, but she was at a better position when she was standing and had her arrow and her bow. Like, let her do her work. Well, she knows what she's doing.
It worked out. Tormund didn't kill her. So at the end of the day,
because he's in love with her.
That wasn't Tormund. There was the other guy who was in love with her.
I feel like they're probably the Warg. I feel like they're probably all in love with her. Let's be serious.
Oh yeah,
like the only female,
the only sexy wildling.
Yeah, pretty much. What are you trying to say about? What are you trying to say about Gilly? I don't know. What are you trying to say?
God, no, I kind of have.
Gilly gets smarter and smarter every episode,
right? I
kind of
have
a
thing for Gilly.
We all do.
It's those doe eyes.
But yeah. But, so the wolves, dire wolves, end up helping out John, and he makes his escape.
Yeah.
Not shot by an arrow.
He just takes off and leaves Ygritte there, high and dry, which is this really, that is one way to end a relationship.
You know, I was kind of glad that he did that because it's pretty obvious that their values and morals, they just don't match up. Like, they're two different people. They come from different parts of the country or whatever, and they're always of that world, and they're always just going to have different opinions, different values. They're never going
to
see eye to
eye. Are you saying two different people can't come together to make one?
It was Summer Lovin'. Somebody needs to put those two to the Grease soundtrack.
It was Fire Lovin'.
It was his first, but
John got kissed by fire. Let's be honest.
Oh, he got kissed.
I don't feel like someone like John can climb as high as he wants to in this world with a lady friend by his side who prevents him, and almost she does weaken him, in my opinion.
I don't know if I think she weakens him. I just think he was very confused and conflicted because he finally found a girl. He always forsworn being with girls, and he never experienced what it was like to have someone like that. And then he got confused. He's like, well, this is something really amazing that I can't do if I'm part of the Watch. But this is what I swore my vows to, is to be part of the Watch. And I think it was just that confliction of honor and love, and he didn't know what to do.
Well, I think in this episode he made his choice. He didn't kill that guy.
Yeah, he did make his choice.
He didn't kill that guy. She did. And then I think by him running away, saying he's a crow, that's him like taking back his vow not to be with a woman, in my opinion.
I think I liked the inner turmoil. I thought it was really good, and it was a really good thing for John, because John's bored. He's just kind of flat, I feel, as a character in the show, and I thought this was a really great moment of just, what am I doing? Her, him, kill this guy, my honor, what's going on?
Yeah, that is something you don't get as much of in the show as opposed to the novel, because you get his thoughts in the novel where he's thinking, like, he's so conflicted in the novel, and in the show it's hard to show that. So this is kind of a good way where you find out, like, okay, he was conflicted the whole time, and they tried to, but I do agree with you, Kristen. He made his choice, clearly, and what he did in his actions, and that kind of ends with the John's end. And on Bran's end of thing, he decides that he is definitely going north after what happened with Hodor, and he wants Rickon and Osha to stay behind, and Osha to protect Rickon.
Yeah, well, Osha's told them that there's no way in hell that she is going past the wall.
Pretty much.
She is done with that. She saw some White Walkers or some badness happening up there, and she is not
that
going back.
Thing.
Oh, her husband. I forgot. Her man.
Yeah.
All that jazz. And so Bran does a nice thing, and he's like, you don't have to come with me. Take Rickon, and that you just bonded with over drinking your own blood. That's a nice little bonding moment. And and take off. Go to, what is it, the last
Umbers.
Hearth, which is the castle of the Umbers. And go take Rickon and keep him safe, and we're going to go do what we have to do with the Three-Eyed Raven.
Right. And so then up north now, past the wall, we've got Sam and Gilly. Another brief scene with them. We're not getting long ones. It's just Sam telling Gilly about Castle Black and the Night Fort and the secret passage that's supposedly at the Night Fort.
And Sam's a wizard now.
Because he can read.
Yeah. We learn about the secret entrance, which is pretty cool, that nobody else knows about, and he just has to find it. That's a good thing that we know how he's going to get through the wall, because if he just ended up on the other side of the wall, there would have been a lot of questions.
Yeah, it's definitely, I agree with you, it's great that, and we also get that his knowledge, it comes in handy. A lot of people don't see how handy it is that he can read, and he is a wizard and has this knowledge from being his wizard. You're a wizard, Sam. You're a wizard, Harry. I had to do that quote.
Whenever Gilly actually looked at Sam and said that he was a wizard, you could see in his eyes that he like just loved the way that she saw him and looked at him, and it's like you could see the love in him because he finally was with someone who like saw him as he wanted to be seen and believed in him. And it was just, it was nice to see that on reflection on his face because he's so used to everyone always breaking him down.
It's just a good thing he wasn't dropping any big words in that scene, you know, because that would have ruined the moment.
Or had to make a fire.
Or had to make a fire, too. So with that said, guys, that does it for this episode. But before we talk about some brief comments from you guys, I do want to say if we could get your support in any way possible, please go to iTunes, please go to YouTube, rate, comment, positive or negative. We just want to know what you guys think so we can make the show better for you guys. Or you can always come join us on the live chat. As I said, next week, very special live chat where we're going to be live from the John Lovitz Comedy Club. Or come join us. Come hang out with us as we watch the show and do the show. And
with Eric Layden and Ryder Strong, if you didn't hear that earlier.
With many guests. So, and I do want to thank some of you guys on iTunes, Dream Reicher. Thank you so much for commenting. And on YouTube, Savage Personifying 90 said, last week was the first time I wasn't wearing white, and apparently I'm back to wearing white. And I meant to wear red, too. That's the funny thing, but I'm back to wearing white. And then Rob Gold, thank you for commenting. He actually commented about how he met me at the Grove last year. So, Rob, it was great meeting you at the Grove last year, and I think Star Wars Expert used to be your name, too, on YouTube. So
Come join us
if you're in the LA area. It was great meeting you as well, so thank you so much. And, guys, unfortunately, we do need to wrap it up, otherwise we get to more comments. Let's do some predictions. By predictions, I mean what we saw in the coming attractions.
And now, you're after Buzz TV predictions.
So
I predict we'll see the red wedding. Oh wait, that was this week.
Yeah, I was so scarred I couldn't even watch the next week. Huh?
I really wasn't sure if they were going to do it for the season finale or they were going to do it this episode. And I'm glad they kept it all to this one episode, as episode 9, as opposed to breaking it apart, because I think that would have taken away how dramatic it was.
Something that's really, I agree with that, and something that's really interesting is the storylines are dwindling. We saw Renly's go bye-bye, now Rob's gone, and it's just like, you know, it's going to be the other storylines will grow as some of these storylines are gone.
Yeah, and you had a lot of people complain before, especially with season 2, that there were so many characters, if you only watch the show, it was hard to keep track of them all. So guess what? Now there's less to keep track of.
We need them.
Just for you guys.
Because we're going to kill them.
Yeah. But great thing about Game of Thrones is you never know what's going to happen and who's going to die. And this episode just further proves that. They are not afraid to kill major characters.
And it sounds like the Northerners will never forget.
But we see the Starks' banners burning in the upcoming attractions. We see that Stannis is going to be back. The Lannisters are going to be back. So once again, we had a break from the Lannisters this episode, even though Lord Bolton said he was a Lannister now.
Yeah.
But from that, other than that, we did get a break from the Lannisters. And dragons! Dragons are back!
Dragons!
Dragons!
And apparently, a crown does not give you power.
Apparently.
Oh, is Tywin finally going to give Joffrey the beatdown he deserves?
Hopefully.
Let's hope. Yeah. Let us hope.
I hope that's just the final scene of the season.
It's just a big slap.
That's just like a, yeah!
Finally, some positive note exactly. Other than this episode. But guys, thank you so much for joining us this week in this huge Red Wedding edition of AfterBuzz, and definitely come join us next week. Once again, I'm Dave Klein. You can find me on Twitter at TheDaveKlein. That's KLEIN, or go to my website, djk-online.com.
I'm Kristen Elizabeth Snyder, and you can find me at the John Lovitz Club next Sunday.
Whoa!
Come hang out.
In person.
Camping out. Ready.
And I'm Kyle Maddock. You can find me at Mad Canard, like the duck, on Twitter, or at podcastoficeandfire.com.
All right, thank you guys. We'll see you next week
at the John Lovitz Club. Woo!
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
Club.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.